Your Steve Jones Show podcast is loading now. The Steve Jones Show podcast is sponsored by Sunbury Motors, North 4th Street in Sunbury, and Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf.
This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now, from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Welcome back. Great to have you with us on this Wednesday as the Purdue Memorial Golf Tournament continues at the Susquehanna Valley Country Club to benefit the Greater Susquehanna Valley YMCA. I'm proud to be a part of the Truman H. Purdue Memorial Golf Tournament. We continue now, brought to you by Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury, Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15, Hummel's Wharf, and online at sunburymotors.com. All right, so we've heard from the coordinators, Stacy Collins on special teams, Mike Yurcich on offense, Manny Diaz on defense. Now the head football coach of the Nittany Lions, James Franklin, what he had to say about his football team.
So I'll keep it brief, but first of all, appreciate everybody coming out and supporting Penn State football. We truly appreciate it. We're a few days in now, so we got a better feel kind of where we're at. I think we have had a really good off season, from winter workouts to spring ball to summer training. I think our strength staff have done a phenomenal job. Our guys have done a phenomenal job. We are bigger, stronger, and faster than we've been. I think we got a little bit more of a mature team, and that plays a role in it at some positions. But it's been good. I thought our practice one was really good. I thought our practice three was excellent. Which happened yesterday, which was extremely competitive first day in shoulder pads, and that was good. So a ton to build on, and obviously having all three coordinators back in their positions, there's a ton of value in that. So there's really no new teaching going on except for the young players. So far, so good. Been very competitive. We are looking forward to the open practice that we're having, which is something that is new. It's something that we've really wanted to do for a while. I've brought it up to the coordinators, and we haven't always all been on the same page that everybody wants to do it. I think some of you guys know me and Manny went and visited the Patriots, this past offseason. And we think it's going to be a good thing. One of the reasons I'm excited about it is we like to play in Beaver Stadium. We think being in Beaver Stadium is good for our guys, so they're not experiencing it for the first time. But I also think there's an aspect of playing in front of the fans and playing in front of the media that also prepares our guys. One of the things I would ask from you guys as a media team that covers Penn State football. Chris and Greg are going to kind of put out the rules of that. We've gone to basically the Steelers and the Eagles, and we're going to pretty much cover a very similar format the way they do their open practices. And to me, if you guys can follow that, that would be great, because then we'll be more likely to do it next year. If some people can't follow then that will be problematic for all of us. And I don't think good for all of us. So I think this can be a win-win for everybody. But we're excited about it. We got a good team. We got a exciting season coming forward. We got some interesting matchups. Obviously, most importantly, we open up here at night, against West Virginia, 7:30. So should be tremendous opening game of the season. So appreciate everybody being here, and look forward to spending the season with you guys, and I open it up to questions.
All right, please raise your hand. We'll bring a mic to you. Go ahead, Mark.
Hey, James, how you doing?
Hey, Mark.
You're in a very volatile profession, but now you're here going into your 10th year, second most tenured coach in an 18-team conference. Can you wrap your head kind of around that, and does it seem like it's gone quickly, or given all the things that have changed, is it been kind of a long journey here?
Yeah, I think your description of the profession is accurate, and I think that's for a lot of different reasons, as we all know. This is kind of aligns more with kind of my DNA and kind of who I am as a person. very loyal person. But I also think it aligns with kind of what the university is used to as well. So I think those things, you know, make a ton of sense. It is also very unusual as well for there to be, I think, three different athletic directors during that time and three different presidents. And I want to make sure I'm perfectly clear on this. I am very, very appreciative and have a ton of respect for all three presidents and all three athletic directors who all came to Penn State at different times with different challenges. And I'm very, very appreciative of all of them. But yeah, it's somewhat unusual in today's college football, which in also in some ways is sad, right? I think stability is good for a lot of things and for a lot of people and a lot of organizations. But I don't take it for granted one day. This is a special place and a special community with history and tradition and passion. You know, so it's special. I think you guys know, I think we have 19 alumni working in the Lash football building, 10 former lettermen. So we take a lot of pride in that as well. There's been some challenging days, but many more good days. And I wake up every single day feeling blessed and appreciative.
Hi, James. You've made it clear how what you think of this team, that how well you think you can be. Why is that? And do you feel like the window is as open as it's been for you guys to get to the playoff?
Yeah, I don't know if I've necessarily said all the things that you just said. And sometimes I think you guys do that to try to trick me to just go along with what you say. What I have been very clear on, in my opinion, is I do think this is as much depth as we have had. We got a three deep at pretty much every position. And I'd probably describe it a little bit more in more detail as probably a more of a 2.5 deep. So what I mean by that is if you're talking about the defensive end position, really talking about five guys that we think we can win with. So two deep at each side, and then a spare, you know, a fifth guy that could swing. But at some positions, I do think we have a true three deep. I just don't remember us having that as consistently across the board. And that really even goes to the specialists. I think we got more competition at the specialist positions that we've had in the past. So I think the stability on the staff, the more depth, those things are good. And I think they typically lead to giving yourself a chance to be successful. So are we excited about it? Yes. Do we still have a lot of work to do and a lot of questions to answer? Yes. Do I think we are arguably in the best conference in college football and specifically the best division? I think we're part of that argument. I think it's hard to say that we're not. And again, I've been a head coach in both conferences that are a part of that discussion, in my opinion. So I think I got a pretty good lens on all of this. So that's how I would describe it.
Coach, I love some early camp reaction. What's the one story you have wanted to go home and tell the family from this first week? What's the one thing that's really jumped off the page?
I guess after 10 years, there's not as many new and exciting things to talk about. But I try to usually get home in a reasonable hour and sit down and talk with my wife. A lot of times the girls are in bed. One of the things that was cool yesterday, Frank Leonard, we were talking about this on our ride home last night. You know, how many wives and kids and families were at practice. And I think that's another thing that we take a lot of pride in here at Penn State is it is a family atmosphere. In a lot of places, they say it is, but it's really not. People aren't comfortable coming into the office and being around. My wife was at practice yesterday with the second dog that we've gotten. I didn't want the first one. I actually like the first one now, but I'm not gonna like the second one no matter what. But it was cool having all the wives at practice, and I think that's important for our players. I think that's important for our culture. So coming home and just kind of filling my wife in kind of on the blanks and things that are going on in the program, but I feel really good about it. I don't really have anything that's kind of exciting that I'm going home, kind of can't wait to tell my wife about that happened today, because we're very routine oriented. We don't tweak and we don't change a whole lot of things unless they need to. We found a better way of doing it based on off-season studies of best practice. So we're very routine oriented. This media day and this press conference pushed our staff meeting from 7 a.m. to 6:30 a.m. So the coaches love you guys for that. But we're pretty regimented about how we do things. So not a whole lot of that. What's up, Ricardo? How you doing, buddy? Ricardo played for me at the University of Maryland, was a great player, and we've stayed in touch and is doing great things. So it's really cool to see Ricardo here. Welcome to Happy Valley, brother.
James, you know, a few days ago, the news that Oregon and Washington will be joining the Big Ten. What were your initial reactions to that? What are your thoughts of that in the future?
Yeah, I had some conversations. It's really cool that our president, Dr. Ben DiPudi, picks up the phone and calls me and includes me in those conversations and discussions, and Pat Kraft as well. I'm very appreciative of that and don't take that for granted. I will say that, my focus, and obviously this press conference is about specifically our football team and getting ready for West Virginia and getting ready for the Big Ten Conference. I do think it obviously, with what you see that's going on in college football right now, it's not shocking, that these things are kind of happening. It's somewhat sad in some ways, not that these people are being added to our conference, because I think obviously there's a lot of strategy that goes into that. But, I do think there's some challenges that come along with it. And it's just very different for most of the people in this room. It's very different than the college football that we all grew up with. And not really college football, college athletics, where, at least for most of the year, it was pretty regional. I do think it's a huge win for USC and UCLA, from a travel perspective. I think it's a huge win for them.
Hey, Coach, how you doing?
Good, how are you?
Are you saying you're a cat person, first off, not a dog person?
No.
Okay.
Just no.
No animals.
Yeah, just it's back to the routine thing.
Okay.
Like, I think me and my wife kind of had the two daughters finally figured out.
Right.
And then you're adding another thing to the equation.
Just want to make sure on that.
Yes,
look,
sir.
Going back
no
to
cats.
Mark, got it. Going back to Mark touched on as far as year 10 goes, and just, I know conference realignment's one of the changes, but just the game itself, you've seen so many unprecedented changes in the game since you've been here. I mean, transfer portal, NIL, conference realignment, expanded playoff format, overtime rules. What were the easy ones to predict that you saw, maybe the ones that you're surprised by, and ultimately, how has it affected your day-to-day operations or the way that you do your job from when you started to now?
Yeah, it's been dramatic. And, I don't know if COVID has played a part in it as well, but it seems like since COVID, it's sped everything up. But the last 5 years, I think you guys have heard me say this before, there's probably been more changes in the last 5 years than the previous 50. And I don't think it's close. I don't think it's close. I think the game and the rules were the same for probably at least 50 years. And now in the last five, there's been changes and dramatic changes. I would make the argument, I think we could sit here and have a pretty interesting debate, that some of the changes were needed. I would also say, in defending the NCAA, that nobody seems to be doing anymore. I think people see, once they try to get involved in it, that a lot of these decisions and a lot of these changes and a lot of these rules are much more sophisticated than people think and much more challenging than people think because they cross over into a lot of different worlds. But I guess this would probably be the best way to describe it from my lens and my perspective is the transfer portal. I think it's like the pendulum, right? I think the pendulum has overcorrected. But I would say there was a problem. Should head coaches have been able to have the power to deny kids from transferring from 10 to 10 different schools? Yeah, they shouldn't have been able to do that. That was not right. That was unfair. And to be honest with you, there was really only a handful of people that abused it. And that's probably the same way in any industry, right? There's a few people, maybe 5%, that abuse the rules. Well, now that happens, and now a rule has to be put in place to correct for that. And I think that's really what happened. Instead of maybe allowing coaches, you know, I think it would have been much better to have the conferences and the commissioners come up with a standard rule, whatever it may be, 5 schools, or you can't transfer within your conference or whatever. But there was people saying anybody on our schedule 5 years out, like it just was too much. I also don't think that just complete open transferring is good. And it's funny because I think when a lot of people say things like this, it comes off as being anti-student athlete. And that's completely the opposite when it comes to me. But again, I still believe in the student athlete model, and I still believe that the number one thing we should be doing is educating. And when I talk about that, what I mean by that is when you look at graduation rates, the data is very strong that every time you transfer, the likelihood of graduating goes down because you lose credits. So I think that's a perfect example of what I'm talking about. It's a much more sophisticated issue. Do I think the players should have options and choices? Yes. Do I think the coaches should have been able to restrict student athletes from transferring, you know, anywhere that the coach didn't want them to transfer to? No. But I think we could have gotten to more of a middle ground rather than from one extreme to where we are now. And then if you take education out of it, you know, just the ability for college athletics and specifically football to teach people how to overcome adversity. And then you go to the other end of the spectrum, you come up with rules and guardrails. Well, then the lawyers know what the rules and the guardrails are, so then they use them to create an exception for every kid. So, you know, in my defense of the NCAA and the model to a degree, the problems and the challenges are more sophisticated than I think people realize. And I think one of the best things that we can do is get all the commissioners in the room, in the same room at the same time, and try to do what's best for college athletics as a whole, because they're the most powerful people in college athletics, in my opinion.
Hey, James.
Hey, Neil.
Can you talk about what you've seen from the quarterbacks through the first few practices, and do you have a timetable for naming a projected starter?
Yeah, they've been throwing it, handing it off. Yeah, no, I'm just messing with you. You know, Drew and Bo, obviously, in year two, they look like guys that are year two in the same system mentally. They look like guys year two physically. They've both gotten stronger. They've both gotten leaner. They've both gotten faster. They've gotten more confident with their reads, their accuracy, their decision making, their, you know, those types of things. So they've been impressive. They really have. I think, you know, you just triggered a thought to a question earlier about a surprise. I'd say Smolik has been kind of the surprise of camp so far, specifically in the quarterback room.
That is James Franklin. And we'll come back. John Sauber will put a bow on this from the Center Daily Times, brought to you by our good friends at Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury, Sunbury Motors, Key, Routes 11 and 15, Hummel's Wharf, on News Radio 1070 WKOK.
This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now, from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Welcome back. Final half hour. We've heard from the coordinators, Stacy Collins on special teams, Manny Diaz in defense, Mike Yurcich on offense, and head football coach James Franklin. In a few moments, John Sauber to put a bow on this from the Center Daily Times. Our show today brought to you by Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury, Sunbury Motors Kia, Routes 11 and 15, Hummel's Wharf, and online at sunburymotors.com. Ford Kia Hyundai, the best in new inventory, great pre-owned inventory with the Sunbury Motors guarantee, and a great service department that backs it all up at Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury, Sunbury Motors Kia, Routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf, and online at sunburymotors.com. All right, so let's get to it. John Sauber, Center Daily Times. John, you always do great work. It was great to see you over the weekend. Looking forward to seeing you on Saturday for the open practice. Welcome to the show. It's great to have you back.
Thanks for having me on, Steve. Always appreciate it.
So, John, let's start with media day. What did you learn yesterday that maybe that either confirmed some things you already knew or also maybe gave you some new information?
Yeah, one, that I still hate watching things happen while being rained on. I think that is the first thing. Is practice opened yesterday while it downpoured, which was not ideal. Fortunately, moved inside pretty quickly there. But I think a lot of confirming of stuff, right? That I think we all knew that a starter wouldn't be named until probably the end of fall camp. I think the last two starters were named August 23rd and August 24th at quarterback. I don't see any reason to believe that it won't be Drew Aller, but I understand, you know, James Franklin likes to go through the process with all this. James mentioned that 8 or 9 receivers are competing for spots, which I thought was interesting. I think that number previously was at 6 or 7, if I remember correctly, or around 5 or 6, somewhere in that range. So that the fact that they're having guys step up further down the depth chart, I think is a good sign for Penn State. But yeah, I think, you know, just a lot of affirmation. We know that Chop Robinson and Kalen King are probably going to have special seasons, right? And like Olu Fashanu is going to have a special season. A lot of guys being talked really highly of in that regard. You know, one of the things that I thought was really interesting, I was talking to Manny Diaz and he mentioned, that everyone wants a Hollywood speech, right? For, from a guy that's a leader, but that's not like who guys really look to for leadership. They look to guys who set the right example and everything like that. And, I think he described the quarterbacks in that way. But yeah, I thought it was, honestly, the wide receiver thing is going to have my attention for a while. I think it is one of the most fascinating things about the team this year. And I think they're, in large part, because I'm very high on a few of those guys. I know when we got to practice last Wednesday, I saw Trey Wallace and I was like, man, he definitely got bigger, right? Like you could tell that he was, putting work in the strength and conditioning program. And I think that's someone especially that I'm looking forward to watching this year.
Yeah, and but just so you know, if it makes you feel better, the last 5 or 6 periods were outside yesterday. So, yeah. it showered a bit, yeah. So, if it makes you feel better. All right. The depth part of it. James was asked about it. He talked about it extensively. Yesterday, what was your impression on the depth part of it?
Yeah, I think that is going to be the difference maker for this program this year, right? He's talked about in the past about how they have guys at the top, and then maybe you look further down the depth chart and you don't see the guys that can maybe push those guys and help them get better. I think that's pretty much the case across the board this year that they've got enough guys to make guys uncomfortable at the top, right? Like even someone like Nick Singleton, who I think everyone would agree is fantastic, can't take a breath, right? Because if he does, Catron Allen's going to be, jumping up to take all those cares. And I'm not even, certain that Singleton will be the top guy, right? It could be Allen, theoretically. It could be either of those guys. They'll be splitting so many carries this year. I think it's not even necessarily always about, the guy down the depth chart is going to contribute a ton. It's the guy down the depth chart can help the guys at the top get better, and I think that's really important. It's the kind of thing that the best teams in the country always have. And I think they have that this year at pretty much every spot. James did mention safety. It's right now it's a two deep and not a three deep. But that two deep, like he said, is probably better than it was last year, even if it's not, even if you don't have Tig Brown at the top to kind of lead everything there. It's still a very good position for Penn State. And I think, you're going to find that there aren't many spots on the field where there are concerns right now. And, I can't remember the last time that was the case. I mean, last season we were all wondering what the offensive line was going to look like, and no one's even talking about it now because I think we all expect it to be very good.
There will be an open practice on, I want to say, Saturday. Does that sound right?
Yep.
Which will allow the media to be there. I think you're to be there for the whole thing. I think.
Yep, that's what it sounds like.
Yeah. There will be rules around it, which will be similar to the rules used in training camp for media to cover the NFL. With a full opportunity to see everything, all 24 periods, what will you be looking for going in, and how do you want to cover it? Some people like do statistics. I mean, how do you want to do it?
Yeah, to me, this is this is part of the reason that I love doing this stuff. I think we all love football, right? It's hard to cover the sport if you don't, but. I love the game, and I think this is a really good opportunity to just kind of trust your eyes, right? And see what I'm seeing and watching. And I know you mentioned some people do statistics. I'll probably honestly just be taking meticulous notes about, guys and the consistency and everything like that. The chance to see one-on-one reps, I think, is crucial. That's something I'm really looking out for. Hopefully to see, plenty of 11-on-11 reps, which is not something we usually get to see. And seeing how guys fare in those situations, because, even with one-on-one reps, it's one thing for a defensive end to beat an offensive tackle. It's another for him to do it when there is a running back waiting to chip him or a tight end waiting to chip him, right? It's really interesting when you get into those 11-on-11 situations that we haven't seen since the spring game, that the media hasn't seen since the spring game, at least. So I'm really looking forward to really just, diving in and trying to be as many places as I can at one time, to see these guys compete in those situations. And then, like I said, I don't think there's anything more valuable than those 11-on-11 reps, when you can see how it all comes together, how guys perform when another player is dependent on their action, when they're on the field. So I think those are going to be the most valuable things we see, and I'm really looking forward to it.
Friday was one of the wildest days in the history of college sports, where on Thursday night it looked like Arizona was all set to go to the Big 12. Tony Petitti had been authorized to at least consider Oregon and Washington because they had already been vetted a year ago.
Right.
And then Friday morning, the story was circulating that the Pac-12 may make it. And then by 11 o'clock in the morning on Friday, everybody looked around and said, where's my lifeboat? Oregon and Washington went to the Big Ten. Arizona State, Utah went to the Big 12. What is your thought on the expansion of the Big Ten to 18 with the addition of Washington and Oregon?
Yeah, I think it's great for the conference, right? I think James Franklin had mentioned this at Big Ten Media Days that, all these conferences are looking for a way when the playoff expands to 12 to try and get 6 teams in, right? Because that's how many you can get in. And I think this really increases Penn State, the rest of the Big Ten's profile of getting as many teams in as possible to the college football playoff. There are teams at the top now across the board that are going to be competing for those types of things that are positioned to do that. You have obviously Penn State, Ohio State, Michigan. Now you have USC, who's consistently, I think, going to be at the top as long as Lincoln Riley's there. Washington and Oregon are very competitive. Dan Lanning and Kalen DeBoer are excellent coaches. UCLA is, continuing to improve. So, even just those 4 teams coming into the conference next year all have playoff aspirations. I think you're going to be looking at the Big Ten trying to do what it can to position itself to get as many teams as it can into the college football playoff. Selfishly, like, I'm going to miss some of the, and I've seen athletic directors and everything say that, like, Washington wants to keep playing the Apple Cup and Oregon wants to keep playing the Civil War against Oregon State, but I'm going to miss some of those things, right? Like, I think we all know why these decisions are made. They're financially driven. That's, you know, I understand that, but I think from a fan of the sport perspective, and I'm not even usually a traditionalist with these types of things, right? I understand that things change and are always evolving, but it is unfortunate that I think you could lose these fun rivalry games, because it always felt like, to me anyways, and maybe this is just anecdotal, that, you know, even when Oregon was good, they could always trip up at the end against Oregon State. And, you know, I know there are non-conference games, rivalry games that still happen, right? Like Georgia and Georgia Tech still play every year. I don't think it means these things are going away. But I think when they were in conference, they always had a little bit more juice to them. And, I'll miss some of those aspects of this realignment phase, because it sure seems like it's not over, right? There are four Pac-12, Pac-4 teams, whatever you want to call them, just kind of lingering out there. And we don't know what's going to happen with them. And I think this is probably just the second seismic shift after Texas-Oklahoma, and that there's probably something more coming sooner rather than later.
How closely are you looking and following the ACC drama with Florida State in this vein?
I am not proud of how much of that Florida State Board of Trustees meeting that I watched last week, just because it's all very entertaining, and it's all like just kind of fun to watch it play out. But I do think like Florida State is very clearly angling itself for something. I mean, they're not even angling. They said it, right, that they will leave if they have to improve their situation. It always has felt like we have been heading towards the Big Ten and the SEC being their own kind of tier, right? Like it almost is already because of the financial disparity. Now the ACC teams being locked into their grant of rights until 2036 is obviously a problem because it's going to cost so much money for them to get out of it. But I think the Big 12 has already fallen behind. The ACC is falling behind financially. And you're just kind of wondering and waiting how long it'll take, Clemson, Florida State, to make that move and make a decision. We saw it with the Pac-12 last week, right? Like, all it took was Oregon and Washington deciding to go, and it completely destabilized the conference. And you could argue that that happened when USC and UCLA left, that was the real destabilization, and this was just still the aftershock of it. But I think, all it takes is two top-tier programs to say that they're leaving a conference for the whole thing to get shaken up within a year. So I think that is going to be fascinating to watch. I mean, everyone's always looking at Notre Dame, too, right, because they're in the ACC bunch of sports. But I think Florida State, Clemson, Notre Dame are kind of the three major players, it seems, left and that will inevitably end up somewhere else.
Are you sensing this is helping college football's popularity, or are you sensing that it's making people more hesitant about college football and college sports in general?
I think this is probably against conventional wisdom, but I don't know that it's having much impact either way, right? I think this is one of those just kind of realities where we're already so deep into it, right? All the people that cover it, all the people that love it and enjoy it, that you just kind of go with the flow. Like, I don't think it's necessarily going to drive anyone away just because those rivalry games happen or because conferences are shifting. But I don't know that it's going to draw anybody in either because, like, you know, suddenly a team is traveling further across the country. So I think really it's, I don't know if there's going to be as much of a fan impact with all of this stuff. I do like, I mean, from the positive upside for fans and for, even media members, is you get to travel to new places, right, to go see these teams play. You get to see new stadiums and stuff like that. But I think that's such a small, small part of it that it's not, overly relevant even. But, yeah, I think generally, like, it's – I don't know that there's going to be much impact from that perspective. I think if you love college football, you're probably just kind of disappointed, right? I don't think it means you're going to stop watching or you're going to stop following it or like that. But I think there is some level of disappointment and, like, you just kind of wish it hadn't happened.
There's another element to it. I mean, now I think you have a chance in the regular season, as you're building toward a playoff, of some really interesting matchups. I mean, the Big Ten is not going to, the current Big Ten scheduling model for 24-25, which obviously will have to be tweaked, adjusted, whatever. USC, Ohio State, Michigan, Penn State, everybody's playing 2 out of 3, right? Because they know the TV networks want that. Now you mix in Washington and Oregon, I think it gives you more options and juice to have bigger games during the regular season.
Yeah, and I think you're going to see more, you know, three-loss teams in the playoff, too, because of that, right? I think there's going to be the acknowledgement of, like, okay, this, Ohio State lost to three teams, but look, all three teams are also in the playoff, right? Like, so it's like, how can you say that they're not worth that while? But, yeah, I think it's going to make the regular season more fun. It's going to make it immensely more valuable because you have to win those games when, there's so many good teams that you're competing against week in and week out. Even if you can get in with 2 or 3 losses now, that doesn't necessarily mean that you will. So I think it is going to increase the value. I do think we're also probably heading toward what's old is new again, right? With we're losing divisions here after this season, but I think they're probably going to have to come back as these conferences expand. Like, it seems like when the inevitable happens and it gets to like 20 or however big it gets, that we see maybe not divisions, but like pods within each conference just to kind of make it a little bit easier. But I do think, you know, that's probably, it's logistically, it just makes more sense to do it that way. But yeah, no, I think the regular season is definitely going to be more fun. There's going to be more high profile matchups, and, you know, I am always all for that.
Well, and I've asked this question to many people, and this goes back to the wintertime. I was out at Wisconsin. I was talking with Matt Lepe and Mike Lucas and Dave Revson. You know, we were at shoot around. And I said, let me ask you guys something. This is when it was 16. Is finishing 6th good enough? In basketball, it is. Because it gets you the NCAA tournament. Well, now the question is, with 2 new teams, I'll revise it. Is finishing 8th good enough? Is finishing 8th enough to save a coach's job?
That's a good question, and honestly, I think the answer at this point is probably going to be no. Which is, you know, you're still in the top half of the conference, right? Like, it's, you're clearly a good team if you finished 8th in a conference with, those kind of behemoth type teams in it. I listed off those 7 programs that doesn't account for Wisconsin. That doesn't account for, like, if Nebraska has a revival. It doesn't account for, like, all these other programs, Minnesota, Iowa, who are good teams, good programs, that are kind of going to be fighting the uphill battle that we've seen, like, Maryland and Rutgers and, you know, at times Michigan State fighting with how good the East was. Now you have that across the whole conference. So I think if you're in one of those, call them the Big 7, for lack of a better term, programs, the 3 in the Big 10 East, and the 4 incoming from the Pac-12, nothing short of the top 7 will be seen as a positive, I think. And honestly, all those teams will be expecting to finish in the top 4. So I think it is going to get crowded. You know, that could push for more coaching turnover. Maybe it the opposite happens, and it's like, well, it's, you know, these middle to lower tier programs that want more stability because they understand how much of an uphill battle it is. But I do think there could be an impact from that standpoint for sure.
And finally, back to Penn State football. I know the open practice is coming up. We discussed some of the things you'll be watching for. What will you watch for when it comes to special teams?
I just want to see these guys kick extensively, right? Like, you want to see, because we usually see like 1 or 2 reps right at the beginning of our practice windows that we're allowed to go in on Wednesdays or Thursdays. But I want to see how consistently these guys are striking the ball, especially at kicker with Alex Falcons and Sandra Sahidek. I think there's a possibility that they go like short field goal, long field goal specialist again. I think on some level it makes sense. Falcons was good at extra points this past season and on short field goals at Columbia. Sahidek, we know, has the leg talent to push it out pretty far out there. Unfortunately, I don't think the returner battles have as much juice as they used to. At least kick returner, right? It's you're kind of just back there to fair catch it and get the ball to 25, because usually that's a smart thing to do unless it's a dire situation like late game.
Yeah.
Punt returner is always very fun, though. I'm always enjoyed seeing those guys. But I think on some level, too, you get a good idea of where guys at are at with other positions. You know, if you see guys out there as bullets out there on the outside running down on coverage, Maybe it's an indication that, you know, they're really showing off their athleticism, and maybe that's something to monitor when they take back to the position that they traditionally play. So I do think there's a lot of value in that too. It is interesting though. I can't remember the special team spots being pretty much all up for grabs like this. It's fascinating. See, I didn't even mention punter, where Riley Thompson and Alec Paquette are going to be presumably battling for that job. And, you know, Thompson going into his last year of eligibility has the experience, but again, Paquette came in as a really talented punter, so that could be a tight battle for the duration of fall camp.
John, it is always a pleasure. You do great work, and I'm looking forward to seeing you on Saturday.
Thank you so much, Steve. Looking forward to seeing you too.
John Sauber, Center Daily Times. We thank him for the time he gave us today to put a bow on Media Day as Penn State football practice continues. Although today is an off day, so it's an off day today for Penn State football. Not an off day in the golf course. For us, the Purdy Memorial Golf Tournament to benefit the Greater Susquehanna Valley YMCA, taking place at the Susquehanna Valley Country Club. It's a privilege to be a part of it again. We thank the Purdy's for always giving back to the Greater Susquehanna Valley YMCA. And today's show brought to you by Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury, Sunbury Motors Kia, Routes 11 and 15, Hummel's Wharf, and online at sunburymotors.com on News Radio 1070 WKOK. When it comes to car buying, there's the other guy's way, and then there's the SMC way. The other guys force you into a vehicle you really don't want. The Sunbury Motors way lets you take the time you need to browse, ask questions, and take the test drive and think on it. For over 100 years, the Mertz family and all their employees have made your experience the most pleasant one you'll ever have. The other guys won't offer you the best price for your trade, no matter how much they say they will. The SMC way is their promise to provide you with the most money the market shows your vehicle is worth. The SMC way is to offer you all applicable factory rebates on new vehicles and generous discounts. Looking for a pre-owned vehicle? The SMC way checks each vehicle in a 200-mile radius to determine the lowest price, then beat it. It's the lowest price promise, just part of the SMC way. The choice is up to you, the other guy's way or the SMC way. The SMC way wins every time. Sunbury Motors Company in the North 4th Street Auto Plaza, Sunbury, and at sunburymotors.com. Selling more cars and satisfying more customers for over 100 years.